I'm Sarah Marshall. I've worked with some of the world's leading brands to drive business growth. And now I'm sharing my knowledge and expertise with you. In my podcast, Lessons from the Boardroom, I talk to other successful leaders to find out how they've perfected their craft, driven success, and dealt with the challenges that leadership brings. So come on, dive in. Welcome to Lessons from the Boardroom, the podcast version. Hope everybody's okay today and loving life. Today, we've got a treat for you. We have Richard Barton, and Richard is the MD of Red Sea Research in the UK. And I can't wait to get into this with Richard because I know he's got some fascinating insights to share with us. Welcome, Richard. How are you?
Doing really well, thanks. Nice to see you.
Good. Where are you today? Are you in the sunny south or the...
I'm in East London today. It's Monday morning, so I haven't made it into the office. But yeah, we're typically doing Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays in the office. So it's quite nice to be at home today.
Oh, are you? Now, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays in the office, is that a rule or is it just a loose, this is what we were right to do?
It's an aspiration. I always do Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then sometimes if there are client meetings, focus groups, yeah, that happen on Wednesdays, then yeah, you know, things switch around a little bit, but yeah, we try and do a minimum of 2 days, and they tend to be Tuesdays and Thursdays. We've got quite a lot of part-time workers, so I have to kind of, some people do the beginning of the week, some people do the end of the week, you know, so there's lots of machinations.
Have you found that people want to get back to the office or they'd rather stay at home?
I find that the younger ones, they're quite keen to be back in the office. Yeah. I think they appreciate the space and the bit of life. We're using WeWork now. So there's a whole, it's lovely because there's all these kind of little entrepreneurial micro businesses all around us. So it provides a bit of a vibe. Although I'm always questioning those lads that are playing table tennis at like 9:20 on a Monday morning. Like,
they're being creative, Richard. That's what they're doing.
Exactly. They're giving themselves some headspace. So the younger ones do. Some of our directors are remote, so they're kind of scattered across the nation. We've got one in Cornwall, another one in Oxford. So I don't see them as often as I'd like, but you know, they're grown ups. They do an amazing job. So happy for them to be wherever they need to be.
Yeah, I think that trust element is hugely important, isn't it? Like you say, they're grown-ups, they can do their job, they can do their job where they want to do their job.
Exactly.
Let's talk about, Richard, let's talk about how you got to be the MD of Red Sea Research.
Briefly, I started my career in research in the last century, and people just fell into it, which I think lots of people do. Market research, most people don't really know much about it, and certainly at university. So I kind of fell into it by just seeing an advert for a graduate job and thinking, well, I want to move to London, and that they only want a CV and a covering letter. I'll try my luck. So I did that for a couple of years, and then I realized financial research, although I now quite enjoy it, but when I was in my 20s, I didn't have a huge amount of affinity for kind of open-ended investment companies and bonds and gilts and what discretionary asset managers thought about them. So I kind of thought maybe some consumer research would be more interesting. So I went to work for a media research agency and worked on lots of amazing projects for Sky and the BBC. And then it took me all around the world. So I was going to Japan with Disney. So I've done some amazing media projects that I loved. And I was there for about 15 years and I rose to being MD of Future Thinking, the company that I was at. And then I had a kind of an itch. I just wanted to see whether I'd be able to set up a business on my own. And see how that would go. So we had this amazing opportunity to join the guys. So Red Sea was an established agency based in Dublin, very successful, doing lots of research in the UK from Dublin, and keen to have a London outpost. So I founded the local agency, the local office, with my colleague and dear friend Charlotte Butterworth. And we've been doing that for the last 8.5 years.
Wow. And so from nothing, what has Red Sea in the UK grown to?
So it's 13 of us in the London office now. And yeah, about 2.5 million pounds worth of turnover.
Congratulations.
Not huge, but it's really, I think we've created a really nice little company where people really get on, people stay for a long time. We do really interesting work. So we're not taking over the world, but I think we're having a nice time working on some really interesting projects.
Do you like being an MD?
I do. I like being in charge of my own destiny. So that's important. I like shaping the business. I like kind of being in charge of. I really quite like doing kind of the admin-y type things as well, and kind of keeping on top of the finances and those sorts of things. I actually enjoy that as much as I enjoy doing the primary research. So, yeah, I do enjoy being the MD. When I was more junior in my previous roles, I was always itching to know what happened in the boardroom. I really wanted to know. It was kind of frustrating to me that I wasn't in that room. Hearing what was going on or being part of the decision-making process. So, yeah, no, I enjoy being an MD.
And how do you find doing the do? So doing the research. I know I've just simplified that massively, but doing the research and being the MD. Do you have to chunk up your time? Are you quite boxed about it? Or do you have a different approach?
It's kind of one of our USPs that we kind of promise that the people you meet at the pitch are the people that do the
Which
work.
everybody says that.
I know they do, but it's true in our case. Charlotte and I are some of the one of the we're some of the few people that work full time. So we're very hands-on. And no reports go out without one of us reading them and often writing chunks of them. So it's a truth, and it's important because we in my last role, I spent a lot of time rocking up to presentations to senior clients. And really, I didn't know any more about that project than was on the slides. And I was able to kind of articulate it to the board of Mercedes-Benz, for instance. But I didn't, if anyone had asked me a question about anything deeper than was already on the slides or in the notes, I would have struggled. So I always had a more junior researcher with me, and I go like, tell us the answers. And so I was a kind of a figurehead, and sometimes you'd be like the face of Mercedes-Benz in the morning and then the face of Dixon's in the afternoon. And it was all quite stressful and intense. And now I feel like I'm on top of my brief and I know the ins and outs of the projects, exactly how we got to where we've got to, the recommendations we're making. And I think I actually quite like research. I think it's really interesting. I've always kind of, I always think like everything is interesting for sort of 6 to 8 weeks, and that's the typical kind of l length of a project.
Pickle Richard.
Well, I did some work experience for BBC News back in the day, and I really love the fact that when you're making a live program for the last 30 minutes, and you're doing a kind of a segment, you have to learn very quickly in the morning about that segment. I don't know, it was a consumer business program called Working Lunch that I worked on, and you might have to learn about the economics of care homes in the morning, and then put together a 3 minute piece, and then that's it. You don't need to know about care homes anymore because you're doing car finance the next day or some sort of mortgage scandal the following day. So that was a bit too brief, whereas 6 to 8 weeks is a nice amount of time to kind of get under the skin of a problem. Talk to consumers, get the answer, and then help our clients make the right decision.
I can't tell you how many pitches I have sat through where an agency, either a creative, digital, research, has rocked up and said, the senior people will be the people on your account. And you just go, that is utter BS because you know it doesn't happen. So I'm delighted to hear that you actually are the person who turns up.
Yeah.
Because it is so important because you're just winging it otherwise. So if you
Yeah, we'd probably be bigger if we didn't turn up.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and less exhausted maybe. But no,
Yeah,
I mean,
but it,
keep that. It's massively important.
yeah, I think so, and it keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a kind of there's an honesty to it that when you then turn up, you know what you're talking about. I think
Know
that's
your shit.
important.
Talking about knowing your stuff, tell me the best lesson that you've learned as a leader on your journey.
I don't know if it's the best lesson, but I mean, if people ask me, like, how did I get to be an MD? Because not everyone does, obviously. There's a bit of a kind of a hierarchy, and not everyone's lucky enough to get to the top. I suppose, I mean, it was hard. It was hard graft. I always had a really good work ethic. I think I probably credit my parents. You know, I grew up in a home where I saw people shine their shoes and get up and go to work early and work hard and get on. And I appreciate the lesson that that kind of demonstrated. And I remember I had a former CEO who challenged me once and said, like, why, like, where does your work ethic come from? Why do you care so much? Because I was just an employee, like a middle ranking employee. But it's important to do a good job.
Yeah. And do you think that's changed culturally with younger people coming through? Do you think ever?
I mean, I know there's lots of talk of it. I mean, I can see that from a, the questioning of, like, what's it all for? You know, if you can't afford, if you think you could never afford a house, and all the sort of that escalator that we kind of grew up thinking that everything should be achievable. And I remember when I bought my house in London, it felt like a stretch. It was like 7 times salary or something. But now it's completely unachievable, like 12 times salary or something. So I can kind of understand why you would question, like, what's it all for as a younger person. Yeah, but I have to say, we have some amazing junior members of staff who work really hard, really care. Do great work. I'm always blown away by their insight. And as I get older, having those younger voices and their perspective is so important. I was introduced to the idea of reverse mentorship recently, which I love.
Do
Charlotte likened it.
you?
Well, Charlotte likened it to kind of like adopt a granny to
Adopt a granny.
Yeah, but I think, we've got an intern working for us at the moment, and 21, just graduated. Fascinating to get his perspective on brands, and also to realize that his frame of reference of everything is completely different.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Because as we get older, we think we know more, and we probably do, but there's that unknown unknowns that you don't even know that you don't know. And it takes somebody from an entirely different background, generation, perspective to suddenly make you go, oh, right. Yeah. No, I didn't know about that. And
Yeah.
quietly go and find out a bit more.
Particularly if you haven't got kids, because I don't have children. So, I mean, I see that my colleagues who have got, like, teens in the household, that you are through kind of osmosis, there's a bit more of that, and you get shown TikTok videos and stuff that they're resonating with them. So I guess I have to be a bit more deliberate to kind of stay relevant.
I love Adopt a Granny.
The bigger thing was the kind of reverse mentorship, that it shouldn't just be old people telling young people how they can get on. It should also be about understanding youth trends, and and hearing from your junior members of staff, a kind of a 360 mentorship program, rather than just being kind of top down.
And do you have that in a formalized way?
No. To be honest, I only heard about it at a conference I went to last week. And it just resonated with me that one of the companies that was presenting at the conference had they raised it, and it's something that they've implemented, that they they think is really working for them.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, you know what? I mean, we do it kind of informally. There's only 13 of us, and we're often all sitting at like one big bank of desks. So
yeah.
we chat about everything pretty much. And because we work mainly in media, and some FMCG brands, you kind of have to stay on top of things because especially our legacy media clients, they're looking at the challenges that are out there relating to changes in the media landscape and staying relevant to young people. So you're kind of constantly confronted with it as the business challenge that we're trying to hopefully lead them to fix.
How do you just said that like 13 of you are often at the same bank of desks. I was interviewing somebody the other day and they talked about friendship as a leadership approach. I don't mean that cynically, but generally they were saying they're my friends, and I find his particular leadership style was one that was far more informal, less structured, less hierarchical. Do you think that's a thing nowadays? Is that something that you are more aware of?
I mean, some of the people that I now work with, I've worked with for 20 years or something. So there is a definite friendship. And I suppose, so yeah, I mean, it's something I really value. One thing I would say is you have to be really careful not to be inclusive and to make newer members of the team.
Yes.
If we're telling anecdotes about our last agency, it's important to kind of explain where that anecdote's coming from or why that happened. So that's something to be mindful of. Charlotte's a very dear friend and my co-founder, and everybody else. I mean, they're all just lovely. So it's a treat to go to work, really.
Sounds heavenly. How do you deal with conflict?
I mean, touch wood, it is mercifully not, doesn't happen very often. I don't think we have huge amounts of conflict. I think we're probably, we don't raise it as often as we should sometimes, maybe, but often things work out on their own. I'm kind of probably would suggest kind of guiding people towards the right decision rather than kind of confronting them needlessly and making it antagonistic. Because ultimately in a small space, you need to like work together and you don't really want there to be friction or difficulty.
A quiet diplomacy rather than...
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the hard lessons that you've learned as a leader.
I mean, I do feel like I've been exceptionally lucky. I mean, hardworking, but still lucky to have worked in the agencies I've worked in. My only real kind of frustrations are on the odd occasions where there are kind of errors or things go wrong in field work and you've collected data which needs to be kind of changed or redone or amended. Those are kind of operational frustrations that you come across, and thank mercifully infrequently nowadays. But when I was in my last role, when I was less in charge of the kind of daily grind and less close to it, I would find myself apologizing, being the face of the company that has to apologize to the client and come up with a remedy. And when it's things that you think like, if I'd been running that project, that wouldn't have happened. That's really frustrating. And it's like, you know, you just have to kind of man up and be the face. You're ultimately the face of it. And then the buck stops with you, but it's still frustrating to be in that situation. And as I say, thankfully, it very rarely happens nowadays. But back in the day, it used to happen much more often.
So what did you do about it? How could you... So the end result was that you had to stand in front of the client and take it. But actually, something had broken down in the process, hadn't it, to get to that point. What did you do to try and stop that from happening?
Well, you work with really good people. That would be a really good life lesson. Amazing suppliers. I mean, some of our suppliers I've worked with for more than 20 years, and they're exceptional. So obviously the main objective is to stop yourself getting in that position. So we're quite wary about taking on new suppliers because there's a nervousness. I think it's always worth paying a bit more to get really great people. So that's important too. So we certainly don't work with the cheapest suppliers. I'd rather they spend an extra day checking all their data tables and employing people on better wages if it means they're better at their job. So that's important. And I suppose in the kind of the aftermath, I think it's important that the team, if they've been, I don't know, I'm thinking back now, it's like more than a decade, but in my former company where people used to work for me, if collectively we drop the ball, I front up for it. But ultimately you have to look at the systems and understand like, well, what happened? I mean, typically it was be a supplier issue that, and sometimes supplier issues that you couldn't expect your exec to spot because they're not always evident. So I don't know. You kind of just have to kind of reassess where we're at. Why do we think that happened? What are we going to do differently in next time? And if it's a resource issue, you need to bring in more staff to support that. If it's a supplier issue, you obviously have to have a stern chat with them. And if you demand a refund and they end up doing that project for free, and you pass that back to the client, you can normally iron things out. And it's obviously quite an expensive lesson for the supplier in that instance, but probably important that they kind of learn that lesson too.
I've managed a load of agencies in my time, and one thing that I've learned is like the briefing process is so important. I mean, and so I've worked both corporate client side and agency side, and the amount of times that you don't actually get a brief. And the client, so you end up doing what's called a reverse brief, don't you? And the client says, "Oh, can you just write the brief?" Well, no, not really, because you're telling me what you want me to do for you. But as part of that briefing process, understanding almost the hierarchy of what's important. So, like for example, what you're talking about at the minute is the data quality is the primary important. That's the most important thing. But actually, if your supplier thinks speed is the most important thing, you've got that disconnect, haven't you? And trying to get to that really, really refined briefing process that everybody understands, yes, what the output and outcomes are, but actually, what are the most important things within those outputs and outcomes? That's an art. That is a massive skill in building that understanding between suppliers, isn't it?
I agree. And so whenever we set up a new project with a client, we always have an immersion session, and they're typically moderated by our qual directors and associate directors, because they're obviously trained to pull out the nuances of what success looks like. And those sessions are so important, and to bring the stakeholders in beyond the client-side researchers, who are normally the people that commission the research. And hear from the stakeholders that are going to be using the data, implementing the changes and recommendations that we might come up with, is so important. So that's the question we always ask for you. What does success look like? And then we give everyone a voice, and collate that and feed it back to them and make sure that everyone's agreed before we embark on the project.
That's brilliant. That is actually brilliant because you are checking that they're going to get what they actually want. Because what they don't want is a report. They don't want a research report that's going to sit on the desk. They want to understand the conclusions that you've drawn from it, don't they? I don't think I ever worked with anybody who's done that. Not that I can remember. I think that's a really good way of doing things.
Yeah, it works really well. I think it's 90 minutes at the beginning of the process, which is worth its weight in gold. Because otherwise you're looking at, I don't know, propositions or ad ideas without any understanding of where they came from, what the gestation was. So it's their opportunity to tell us. And ultimately, we're very often embarking on a understanding a sector that we may not. I mean, we're great researchers, but we're not. We can't know everything about every sector. So it's that opportunity that for us to kind of immerse ourselves in it. And often it will kind of prompt us to go off and do additional desk research, what have you, that really frames the research.
Good. What if you had one piece of advice to give to other leaders, other MDs in a similar position to you, what would that be?
I think it's really important to create a kind of a really enjoyable work environment. I mean, ultimately, agency life is working hard. I mean, and I think that's the recognition that everyone's working hard, they're grafting to do the best they possibly can for their clients. And it's incumbent on the kind of leadership to try and create an environment. Charlotte is very good at reminding us to like, we need to have some fun. You know, we all had our head down and we haven't done anything recently as a team. So we want to go out. And actually one of our ADs recently was like, come on, we haven't been out for drinks for ages. It can't all be work, work, work. So she organized that. And I think that's particularly now that we're kind of hybrid working. It used to be much more kind of organic that you'd sort of like have a tough week and all end up in the pub on a Friday. So now it has to be a little bit more structured. But so I think kind of like work hard, play hard sounds a bit kind of corny, but I think it's quite important to create that kind of a sense of camaraderie.
Yeah. And also, though, not a sense of you will enjoy yourself, you will come to the pub and have fun.
Yeah.
There's a stage before that, isn't there, in terms of creating the culture where people want to spend some social time with each other, not necessarily every night, but when the opportunity presents, you don't want to feel as though you're forcing your team to go and enjoy themselves or have some fun or forced fun. You want them to want to do that, don't you? So that there are some steps before the actual night out to make that successful.
Yes, I think my experience is that the sort of the ad hoc drinks are nice, but actually it's much more fruitful and enjoyable and better at team building if you do something together, like we did Giant Monopoly recently, and it was quite hands-on and running about and kind of undertaking tasks together in small teams. We did Crystal Maze a little while ago as well. That was really good and proper. You know, that was really a team of eight. So
Crystal Meth. Crystal Meth. I was like, what?
Crystal Maze.
You probably didn't do that, did you? No.
No, that wasn't on the menu. the Crystal Maze. Highly recommended. Really good team building exercise.
Where was that?
In central London. Yeah. It's the Richard O'Brien show from like the 80s, brought to life. So it's I thought it was excellent, really faithful to the show. I mean, it probably meant nothing to our millennials who didn't really know what the show was, although I think it did come back not so long ago. Anyway, all very enjoyable and quite good fun, especially the bits when you run between zones and take slides and the music's blaring.
Monopoly, is that on Tottenham Court Road, is that right?
It is, yeah, the old Paper Chase flagship store.
But it's an amazing front of store, isn't it? Like when you walk past it, that is a giant Monopoly on the street. Yeah, it looks
totally fantastic. Yes, and the way that it's not just you're not just moving around the board, in order to move, you have to undertake lots of tasks. So it's a team building exercise. So doing that and then heading out for drinks or dinner or whatever, I think is a really good way of bonding and getting to know each other a little
better. You've got a common platform, haven't you? It's a great leveler when you're having to run around and pick up the go to jail card or whatever it is.
So yeah, also a reason, I was just going to say, a reason for our remote staff as well to come into London to kind of join in.
Yeah, of course. So what next for Richard?
Well, more of the same. I mean, we're in the process of moving offices. We're going to share with our sister agency. So our new owners have acquired another research agency, and we're all going to share the same space from March onwards, which would be great because there'll be more of us. There's about, I think there'll be 35 or something of us all in the same space, which would be great. We're really looking forward to it. And they're a really great bunch. We've already had a kind of couple of immersion type sessions and kind of meet and greets. And we've got teams that are working kind of collaboratively, like taking the knowledge from our Irish headquarters, RITSA UK and Relish, and kind of merging. We've created these ideas of knowledge hubs where we're able to kind of assimilate all of the information that we know about each sector and put that forward as a kind of a creds deck. And we've got such an amazing wealth of knowledge and experience that's working really nicely. So we've got really compelling sales stories for each sector that we're building. So I'm quite excited about that. You know, 8.5 years of doing the same thing, it feels like kind of the change is happening to me. But I'm looking forward to it. That's the in the very near term. I've got a nice holiday coming up. Quite looking forward to that. And then longer term, I don't know. You know, I'm 47. I have dreams of maybe driving the Pan American Highway in a camper van. So I just need to try. Yeah, exactly. Just need to try and work out how to get 6 months off.
Well, it sounds like it's within your gift.
We'll see. Maybe I'll feel like I've earned it after 10 years.
That sounds like
I have to ask my boss.
Yeah, a good present to yourself.
Exactly.
Richard, you've been a fabulous guest. Thank you so much for your time. I wish you all the success, and I hope you get your Winnebago for your 10-year anniversary. I'm sure you will. Make it happen.
Thank you very much. Lovely to chat.
Take care.